Welcome again to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Broadsides are a little bit late this morning, but here we are. This is a 2.5-hour show. We go into issues concerned with local civil rights concerns, like, well, that old favorite, the sleeping ban, which should have been on the February 27th City Council agenda in 2 days, but for some reason, once again, is not. Issues like the police treatment of Christina Tafoya in the beach flats back in September, when, as you heard a couple of weeks ago on the show, this young Latina woman with two companions, for the crime of walking across a concrete strip that separates two streets and is apparently a, quote, park, even though it isn't designated as such with any fences or signs, was held for 45 minutes initially at gunpoint, on the ground at different times, handcuffed at different times with a dog barking near her from the canine unit, her picture taken, treated to abusive language, and again, the officers whom she identified among the 9 or so cops that she counted got involved in this whole process in the course of an hour, Sergeants Clark and Sergeant Vogel. These are the kinds of issues that we look into. We also look into issues around bicyclists and motorists and how folks on bicycles seem to get shorter shrift with the police department. Look into concerns about homelessness and how homeless people are treated at homeless services, in businesses, and so forth. And we also answer phone calls. And in case you have some thoughts on anything, you can give a call to 427-3772.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert, speaking of bikes, are you familiar with the flub that KSJO produced?
The who?
That KSJO produced, the flub.
The flub?
Yeah, did you hear about that?
No, I didn't.
Well, two of their, I guess their alternate morning show host.
Right.
Were making a comment during, I guess, the morning traffic. Or the afternoon traffic, one of the two, and they said they made a comment about opening the door to make sure you get the motorcyclist and the bicyclist. And somebody called them on it, and KSGO had to make a retraction on the air, and now they have to put a bicycle and motorcycle safety PSA now.
Yeah, you know, it's funny for us folks in cars. I know I often, in the past, I've kind of gotten out of a car and just missed a bicyclist because I didn't look, and I've often in the past blown it off and said, oh, those bicyclists, as though they don't have just as much right to be on the streets as I do in my car. Yeah. You know, I think it's, you know, it's something that, it's like...
Well, it's a two-way street. Every issue is a two-way, you know.
It's also, yeah, a matter of sensitizing yourself. It's like, you know, you're brought up, you know, it's a car culture. It's not a bike culture generally, so...
It's not, by the way, what alternatives, just off the side issue, what's up with the alternatives for the Billy Joel intro?
Oh, yeah. Well, indeed.
Have you come up with any options?
Hey, we've gotten numerous options, and we haven't actually had our fine vote to see what the people say, though, of course, as the Führer, I have the right to make the final choice.
Yeah,
there's Greedo Serpentino's Downtown. There's 15's Landlord. There's 15's Land, Who Owns the Land.
Yeah.
And then there's your suggestion, which is... Which is what?
Which was, I was waiting for options.
And there was another one, I guess Merlin proposed, was it Merlin proposed that there's something happened here, what it isn't exactly clear, from the 60s?
Yeah.
I think it's,
He might have. That sounds like something Merlin would do.
Uh-huh.
All right, Robert. Hey. I'll let you go with that.
All right, keep those suggestions coming in, man.
All right.
Bye-bye. And yes, it's that, that tired old theme song, which I use, the Billy Joel, We Didn't Start the Fire. But we got that for the moment, and it's such a familiar theme song. Oops, here's another call. You have a theme song to sing for us?
What about Mark Levy?
Mark Levy is good. What we need to do is compose a song exactly for this show. Maybe I could call him up and ask him to do that.
Doesn't he do a song about sleeping? There ain't no sleeping in Santa Cruz?
No, sitting.
Oh, sitting, that's right.
But we can do that, because there's still a sitting ban. That's true.
Well... Why don't you have him rewrite the song to word it as "There Ain't No Sleeping in Santa Cruz"?
That is an excellent idea. In fact, I may ask my producer to call him immediately to get on the typewriter or computer. Before you get off the line, though, V-Man, and I recognize you, you did the show right before mine today?
Sort of, yeah.
I wasn't able to hear you because I was coming back from the South. I wonder, have you done an update yet on the hearing on Thursday, the Zoning Commission hearing on the the phone relay tower atop the
Carousel Motel? Oh, right,
the
cell phone tower. They want to put up a cell phone tower on top of the Carousel Motel,
mm-hmm.
right on Riverside, 110 Riverside's the address. It's like right at Riverside and Beach Streets. And it's in the middle of the flats where there's homes right in the area. Basically what happened at the meeting, there were, I guess about, I don't know, maybe 8 to 10 citizens concerned about the public health effects of cell phone radiation. And people spoke about it to the board, to address the board. And also they had a representative from Sprint there to try and, you know, play down people's fears.
Mm-hmm.
And they also had two representatives from the Carousel Motel, which is owned by the Seaside Company, mind you.
Uh-huh.
So basically, Sprint is slated to make tons of money on this, and
yep.
the Seaside Company is slated to make tons of money just for basically for nothing, just for rent, for having this tower on their roof. And the citizens of the beach flats will basically be radiated with potentially harmful radiation. And the board, unfortunately, there's a little known stipulation in the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which mandates local governments have no authority to regulate the siting of cell phone towers based on environmental or health and safety concerns.
So you immediately
as long as the radiation emissions are under the federal guidelines, right?
So you immediately suggested it was the ugliest thing you ever heard of and wanted a total redesign, right?
Well, the thing is, it's not even it's sneaky because they're going to build it inside of a flagpole. So it won't even look like an antenna. It's just going to be this flagpole. And so mostly people won't even know it's there.
Well, I remember you interviewing an engineer who kept saying, well, if you're right near the base of it on the ground, it's no problem. And you pointed out, yeah, but the waves go out to the horizon, and that's where the maximum impact is.
Right.
And my question to you is do you know who lives in the Carousel? Is that like transients, or are those people who pay monthly rent who are the poor Latinos who essentially do all the work in town and in the beach flats?
Well, as far as I understand it, it's more of a tourist hotel, but people do live there in the wintertime. I know students probably occupy some of the rooms.
Uh-huh.
And the reason that they stated was it would help their, you know, in the winter lean months, it would help them have an income for the motel. It's not the people in the Carousel Motel I'm so much concerned about, because they're pretty safe being right under it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's sort of an umbrella effect, mm-hmm. Where, you know, the radiation doesn't go down, it goes out into the community. And anyway, the board talked about it for a while, and they basically postponed the vote for 2 weeks. So on Thursday, March 8th, they will reconvene for the regular scheduled zoning board meeting, and this issue will be back on the agenda.
Did they have a Spanish translator for
this?
No,
they didn't. And in mm-hmm. fact, they voted not to issue another public notice on this, which is really absurd, because the initial public notice was inadequate, in my opinion, yet fell under the law. They only have to, by law, they only have to inform the people within 100 feet of the proposed site. So they only sent out 96 of these little cards to residents in the area about the meeting at all. They're not going to issue another one.
Now, was this notice in English and Spanish, or just English?
I think it was only in English.
And who are the people who are on the board at the moment? Did you recognize any of the folks up there?
You know, I recorded the entire proceeding. You know, I have this piece of paper, right? I didn't dump it out yet.
Did any Latino folks show up? Any Spanish-speaking people show up?
Not to my knowledge, no. The board consists of William Schultz as the chairman,
mm-hmm.
Robert Bickall,
mm-hmm.
and Caitlin Gaffney.
I've heard of her.
D. Louie, I forget, and M. Britton. One of them wasn't there. One of the board members wasn't.
Now, these, should be pointed out, are appointees of the current super-progressive ha-ha-ha city council.
Right.
And so, theoretically, people can call City Council at 420-5017, ask to talk to a particular council member. You name the criminal; it's your okay. choice there, and just say, "I want to get in touch with your board member because, you know, whatever the merits of these health concerns, one way or the other, the process sucks the big weenie, to use my
yeah.
or sucks the big clit, if you will.
It really sucks."
And what we're saying here is that the story is they don't have to inform the community what they're doing. They don't have to put things out in Spanish. They don't have to issue additional public notices. I would think that, you know, that Santa Cruz would want to be in the forefront of you know, doing some additional research on this and
yeah.
not just jumping, you know, trying to get on the Sprint gravy train.
Right. I agree. And they said, well, there's already this guy, the chairman, William Schultz, he made some comment like, because there's already some antennas existing in the city, but mostly they're not in, like, residential neighborhoods, or at least in dense residential neighborhoods like the beach flats. They're, like, along Highway 1 and Highway 17 and stuff like that, and out by Harvey West, you know? So it's, like, in the more sparsely populated areas in the commercial zones. And this one's, like, right in the heart of a neighborhood, a dense urban neighborhood with mostly low-income Latinos. You know, that's my main concern. I'm not totally opposed to the antenna going up somewhere, but just not near people, you know, where it's going to possibly have potential harmful effects.
Well, perhaps Dr. Arnie Leff, who is a physician who initially did provide a lot of support for medical marijuana locally and then became appointed to the Citizens Police RAH-RAH board and became completely ineffectual. But as a doctor and a Green Party stalwart who hosts the Green Party steering committee meetings, of which the next one is Wednesday afternoon, for anybody who's interested, at his house on Green Street, right across from Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice's house, maybe somebody could contact Arnie Green and ask his opinion of these, you know, this kind of power situation. Are these waves dangerous, or should they be looked at more? And he could come and testify. Of course, we tried to get him to testify on the sleeping ban.
Sure.
We tried to get him to testify on medical marijuana recently when Kate Wells Cannabis Club was shut down completely, essentially sending 4/5 of the people looking for medical marijuana out onto the streets. But I'm just saying it would be good to get local folks who have some medical expertise and, as they always say, some political clout, ha, 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 though
right.
I'm not the person to talk to about getting people with political clout, but at least to call them on these issues and say, look, you know, you may in fact know more than I do, you know, run it by me. And I know that you've done such a great job in researching, you know, these pimp engineers. I don't know, pimp press isn't the proper word. The house engineers, it sounded like I heard part of your interview with the engineer.
He wasn't even an engineer. That was the planning consultant. He's just like a planning consultant for the city. He's not an engineer by any stretch of the means.
Well,
he's going on the recommendation of these engineers who were hired by Sprint.
He kept claiming that they were independent engineers,
right,
I remember.
Right, right, yeah.
And you kept saying, I don't think so.
No, and I mean, it's right on their paperwork. It says it right. The first sentence is like, we were retained by Sprint, you know. And of course, they're retained by Sprint. They're there. Their job is to make this look good for Sprint, to help Sprint get this tower, you know, antenna up. And
Go ahead.
I'm really concerned about the process. I'm also really concerned because, unfortunately, the city, in a way, their hands are tied because of the Federal Communications Commission and the Telecommunications Act, which mandates that local governments have no authority to regulate these based on environmental concerns so long as the emissions, you know, are under the federal guidelines. Unfortunately, the federal guidelines aren't, you know, they're not adequate. In other countries, the federal guidelines in other countries are like 10,000 times lower than they are in the United States for emissions.
10,000 times?
Yeah.
And we're talking about the emissions of what kind of energy?
It's like electromagnetic radiation.
Of a particular sort?
Not aware of that, no.
You know, I think what we need is some intelligible university person who really is independent, who has some expertise in this field and who isn't getting paid a hefty consulting fee by Sprint,
right,
to really come forward and sort of analyze for us what the situation is. He doesn't have to be an advocate of, you know, of destroying all telephone towers everywhere. He
right.
can just be a person that says, well, these are the considerations we have to look at. This is where the status of the situation is. This has been the medical record. I don't know where you're going to find such a person, but I would say the place to begin, if anybody out there wants to do research, and I know you began this, maybe they could get in touch with you, is to sort of, you know, begin at the university and start branching out from there. Or I guess alternately you could begin with an advocacy organization around this.
Yeah, I've been trying to contact this guy, Art Furstenberg, I think his name is, and he's with a group, they're out in Mendocino, and they, you know, I lost the paperwork in front of me, but they basically are, it's like a consumer awareness group about cellular telephones, and mm-hmm. he wrote a really good report that I'm trying to find. It's in my messy room somewhere, but anyway, I've been trying to get a hold of him. He's up in Mendocino, and it's kind of difficult playing phone tag, but...
Any updates on free radio stuff across the country in the last week or two that you think we should know about?
Couple pirates, no, not really, no. Nothing I can think of. I know that Free Radio Austin's going to be going into court soon.
Free Radio Austin, that's Reckless's radio,
yeah,
our former broadcaster.
Right, they got shut down in November mm-hmm. for the second time in a month, and were ordered off the air. They've been going through this process of going through the courts, but I haven't spoken to her in a while, so I'm not sure where their case is at.
It's interesting. Austin is the only other major city that recently annulled its sleeping ban. Portland was the other one, Portland,
huh.
Oregon. But Austin limited its, a judge said the sleeping ban sections of its camping ordinance were unconstitutional and ordered them not to be enforced. And I haven't heard more from them, though Portland, of course, is the city attorney is in a dither because, in fact, that was the ruling up there. The entire camping ordinance, including the sleeping ban, is illegal in Portland, Oregon. I'm curious what's going on in Austin. If you talk to Reckless again, you might ask her if she's got any info on what's cooking with the sleeping ban in Austin.
Right.
Do you want people, people know how to contact you on a free radio hotline at 427-4523.
Right.
If they want to help out with this effort to get more information around effects of microwave broadcasts. A microwave, it's electromagnetic broadcasts.
It's a cell phone.
Cell phone.
Antenna.
Forwarding stations or antennas.
Right.
Well, hey, I much appreciate your update and your work on this, V-Man. It's a kind of obscure topic that I would probably
yeah.
never get into, but I'm really glad somebody's doing something on it.
Yeah, and so again, the meeting will be in March 8th, 7:30 p.m. if people want to come out and speak out.
Any particularly sympathetic board members you think people could actually contact to get some, some political push on this on the zoning board?
Or? You know, it's funny because their mandate, their first mandate for the zoning board is to protect public health, you know. And essentially, their hands are tied on this because of the FCC and the Telecommunications Act.
I was going to say something about that. It seems to me, and you pointed this out in your earlier interview or in your analysis of it, is that they did stop such a station by appealing to the aesthetics of it.
Right.
And if you have to use the aesthetics, well, then use the goddamn aesthetics. That's what I say.
Right.
If you need to delay in order to protect the health of the population by aesthetic considerations, then go for that. And if they sue you in court, then you have more time to really investigate the issue and to publicize it so that whatever the federal law is, if you can show significant health hazards, it embarrasses the federal authorities to the extent that they may have to move on this, maybe even change the federal law.
Right.
Are we talking statute or are we talking some sort of administrative? They laid it down because they thought it was a good regulation.
They laid it down because it's most... You know, it just helps business. And
I mean, are we talking about the Congress? Or are we talking about like some independent bureaucratic group like the FCC or the? In other words, you probably don't know the answer to
yeah,
that
I
either.
Don't. I know there is an appeal though in federal court on that on that stipulation, but
get them to sue. We don't want to have to waste our time and money doing it. Is the way I would look at it.
Right.
Anything coming up this week that you think people should be aware of that's relevant to civil rights concerns or even just public concerns generally you want to put out?
Well, my show's coming up on Wednesday. I'm going to have the folks from SMAC, the Student Media Activist Coalition. They're going to be my guests on Wednesday at 9 p.m.
Rocking the boat at 9 p.m.
And I'm also going to be playing a half-hour interview, the entire interview with Richard Becker. Some folks may have heard some of that on Friday.
Voices from the Village? Or
no, I interviewed him... right before that program, actually, he came a little early to talk to me.
Becker talked about the bombing of Iraq.
The bombing and the sanctions and the movement to stop the sanctions. Yeah.
I know that the other subject again was you were saying at 9 o'clock on Wednesday will be
SMAC, the Student Media Activist Coalition. They're putting on a forum this week on Thursday and Friday about what's the situation in Colombia with Plan Colombia and the fumigation of coca crops and the death squads down there and
great
paramilitary. So. They're going to be on my program talking about SMAC and talking about their...
Do you know when their forum starts on campus? Or I guess that'll be mentioned on Wednesday. People can follow it on Thursday and Friday if they want.
Yeah, I believe it's at 5:30 both days.
And where would that be?
Kresge Town Hall, I believe.
Kresge Town Hall. I know that a SMAC person was at the mic like a month ago after the tenants from 204 Riverside in the Beach Flats were talking about their rents being escalated through the roof. And he linked the rent problems with the sleeping ban.
Hmm.
in an interesting way, and afterwards spoke to me and said he wanted to, you know, link the issues with the SMAC group, which I guess is sort of the successor to the Rascals up on campus.
Yeah.
But he hasn't gotten back to me. So if you talk to him, you might remind him that we're up for, you know, having him on. He can go on the next. He can go on my show the next day after he goes on your show. Hey, he can be, you know, a show a day.
Yeah, maybe they can get their own show. I mean, they are media activists.
That would be great.
So we'll see. Yeah.
Well, V-Man, it sounds like you're in overdrive as usual.
Yes.
I hope you're having an exciting love life and getting some sleep as well.
Sleep not.
Because you're working around the clock to pay the rent. Huh?
Pretty much, yeah. Working and volunteering my time doing this stuff. But you know.
Anything about free radio locally that you want to say to people in terms of upcoming benefits?
Send us money!
I gotcha. That would be to Post Office Box 7507, Santa Cruz, 95061. Or I guess if you want to go email and you want to be anonymous, frsc@microradio.net.
Yep.
Or voicemail 427-4523. Thank you, V-Man.
Thank you.
Appreciate the help.
Bye.
And that, of course, is the V-Man, who has, as he says, his next show coming up at 9 o'clock, Rockin' the Boat on Wednesday. Real good show. I almost never listened to it to my own disgrace. Here's an incoming call.
Hi there, you're on free radio.
Yeah, and B-Man mentioning people sending money and stuff, and, you know, that's good. But I heard, I was listening to another radio station. I know, don't get rumors started, but I know I listen to other radio stations occasionally. And they request that people send in just postcard saying where you're at, basically.
Oh, like sort of listener opinion, sampling, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always suggest this with respect to my show.
You can't help out with money, help out with encouragement.
Yeah, and I mean, I suggest this with my show. I'd love to have people call. You don't even have to call the station. You can call 423-HUFF. Right, the Huff line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And just call 423-4833 and say, do you like the show? Is it good? Is it bad? Is it missing something? Do you want to be on it? And of course, if you got anything about free radio generally, 427-4523, let us know you're out there, because one thing we don't know is how wide our listenership is. Everyone says,
I heard you got a new phone number. It's Humph.
The Humph line will be coming online soon. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Actually, the Humph line is the Fitzmaurice line, and that's the city council, 420-5017. You call them up, and they go Humph, or actually they don't do anything. It's a strange kind of dead-end line.
Well, they got all those people in the office yelling at them and standing up and doing the wave and stuff.
Stealing their pencils, right.
And mooning the secretaries.
Mooning the secretary. That's true,
I heard that there was something about a can or somebody's bodily functions.
Wow, the stories, they get even more and more intense as you move toward our court date, which, by the way, people should remember is March 22nd.
I sure hope they do something about these people taking up space like that. God.
Well, they have. They have enjoined the
but
city council.
There are people trying to practice their rights.
Oh, well, they're just practicing. Maybe someday they'll get it right.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you, caller.
Okay.
Bye-bye. And yeah, that for those who don't know what we were talking about, we're talking about the City Council Coffee Klatch and Tag Team Teach-In, the latest effort by myself, Becky Johnson, Bernard Klitzner, and about 15 or 20 other people who stopped in at different times to peacefully lobby the City Council to put on the agenda sleeping van repeal or something equivalent that would deal with the winter shelter crisis and the winter survival crisis for homeless people. And, of course, nothing was put on. Instead, Mayor Fitzmaurice, through an administrative assistant, Anna Brooks, had us enjoined in an ex parte, that is to say, a court order without a hearing, from the offices, even though the substance of her complaints against us, she claimed we were harassing her, though we weren't violent, she said, and we didn't threaten violence, but just our very presence there made her uncomfortable. And there were claims that Becky Johnson would say things occasionally, actually I think twice in a total of 17 days, on two separate days, how did you sleep last night? And this so offended and hurt, not actually it wasn't even Anna Brooks, it was another person who was visiting, that they decided that they had to protect the staff from such sentiments. Pretty interesting stuff for supposedly the center of your city government at 809 Center Street. If you decide you want to, you know, wander on down to the city council offices and sit down with an end the sleeping ban sign to wait for a council member to wonder why the damn sleeping ban repeal, and I use sharp language because I think it is an accursed thing, the sleeping ban,
why sleeping ban repeal isn't on the February 27th agenda, as was promised to various mainstream people, and we'll be talking about this in a moment, then do so, because those are your offices. They're open to the public. The only people enjoined from going to those offices are myself, Becky Johnson, and Bernard Klitzner. The rest of you out there have the complete right to go in there and sit down and wait to talk to a council member until they talk to you during office hours from 8 to 12 and from 1 to 5. So keep that in mind, and if anybody wants to do it, I think I would be tickled pink to hear that. No criminal charges were ever filed against anyone there. No arrests were ever made. No citations were ever given. The police, in fact, were never called in terms of a formal complaint against any of us that any of us heard about, though there was sort of some secondary thing from Butchie Baker, but it is so obscure that he won't even give me the police report if I was the subject of the complaint. And we're still trying to get that out of them through the discovery process for our March 22nd hearing in court. I hope it is March 22nd. There's so many dates happening recently that I may be confusing this and that. So there are other cities where things are not as barbaric as here, even though ours, of course, is the progressive city of Santa Cruz that is constantly heralded by people like Mike Rotkin as the bee's knees and the most wonderful town and the place where all these crazy activists can do their thing, but it couldn't happen elsewhere. That's not exactly true. As I mentioned before, Portland, Oregon has overturned its sleeping ban. I read you a story in my last show or the show before about Camp Dignity, which is a group of homeless people in a mobile camp that move from place to place, not because they like being gypsies, but because the police are forcing them on, though in Oregon they have a somewhat, well, it's hard to say, more civilized, let's say less uncivilized process, whereby if the police want to raid a homeless encampment, they have to give a 24-hour notice, and then they can take people's property and steal their blankets in the fashion, for example, that Sergeant Steve Clark did in 1996 when he came to the city council sleepers protest and stole the blankets of Pat Ring. And then when asked, why are you doing this, said, because I can. That's the same Sergeant Clark who's recently been in the papers for abusive treatment of Latina Cristina Tafoya, and maybe the subject of a formal complaint on that basis. The same Sergeant Clark who sits on the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women as a police department liaison. The same Sergeant Clark who made the comment 2 years ago publicly and in the Sentinel, and then later comment echoed by his superiors and his co-workers, including Sergeant Baker and Lieutenant Jeff Locke, to the Commission for the Task Force to Examine the Camping Ordinance, when D-Bob hung himself within sight of the county building, Sergeant Clark said dismissively, oh, that was just an autoerotic death. Of course, when the coroner was contacted, he said there was no such thing. There was no evidence whatsoever that this was some sort of sexual deal with a homeless man and a homeless activist who killed himself in the dead of winter, with the sleeping ban being enforced because Catherine Byers would not suspended, as was requested by then liberal council member Crone and Sugar before they decided to jump on the right-wing bandwagon, which is where they're now hustling off to and where they've been on for the last year and a half. So, what are your thoughts on all this? This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We're broadcasting 24 hours a day. The show lasts till 1:30. I come back on Thursday from 6 to 8 in the evening. But while I'm on, you got a chance to express your view. The phone lines are open, 427-3772. 427-3772. And while I'm on, I want to mention a few other shows who do touch on civil rights matters locally. I'm a big one for local stuff because I applaud action on Columbia, concerned about the drug war nationally, and I do some stuff on that myself, the Iraqi bombing, the Palestinian situation, a whole series of crises across the globe, which I think need to be addressed and appropriately are addressed. I think what is left unaddressed often are the local issues in any meaningful way. And so you have politicians who like to parade around on the national issues like Scott Kennedy or Tim Fitzmaurice, Emperor Tim, as I've taken to calling him, but who don't want to take strong stands on local issues, obvious local issues like rent control, like restoring civil rights to homeless people, like community control of police. We can't get a peep out of them. In fact, the actions we get out of the city council are just the opposite. They're actions that increase the blank check that the police department gets, both in terms of money and power. They're actions that increase the suffering of homeless people in terms of refusal to expand shelter, even though the Homeless Services Center recent meetings admit they're cutting back their buses, they don't have enough blankets, they can only provide space at most for 160 people out of 1 to 2,000 homeless people in the city, God knows how many in the county. Homeless census needs assessment of last year says, if you extrapolate their figures, 8 to 10,000. Certainly at least 6 to 10,000 people out there in the county without shelter on any night. And it made criminals, even if they sleep in their own vehicles that are legally parked and not an obstruction to anybody else. And we can't get politicians like Marty Wormhout, who has no problem being the great hero on Planned Parenthood or going after national issues like the Bush stealing of the election, but we can't get her to do a damn thing locally. And of course, then we get onto our local Greens, who want to spend their time wringing their hands about the process and devoting 90% of their time to process, and when it comes to substantial issues, nothing happens. Now, I'm hoping actually that is going to change. I'm hoping that the Green Party is going to be doing something different. Indeed, today there is a meeting of the Homeless Working Group of the Green Party. Initially, a group, their meeting, I'm told by the acting chairperson, Nick Whitehead, is going to be concerned to some extent with setting up a mission statement and process. And for those who are exhausted by such things, you might want to wait if you have substantive concerns to bring to this Homeless Working Group. If you are a Green Party member, you'll be allowed to vote and participate. Hopefully you'll even join the Homeless Working Group, the Green Homeless Working Group, if you're a Green Party member. That is what Nick was suggesting, Nick Whitehead, at the last Green Party Assembly, which I attended. If you're not a Green Party member but you're a member of the public, you will be allowed to attend. You will be allowed, presumably, an opportunity to speak, but you will not be, of course, a part of the voting process. And I point out that anybody can become a Green by registering Green. And people can become a part of this process and should become a part of this process insofar as there is a real chance that the Greens will actually do something. And the Greens are a particularly important group here because the mayor is supposedly a Green Party member. The mayor got the Green Party endorsement. Ed Porter, another council member who was supposed to have the sleeping ban on the agenda as an informational item, was elected not only with Green Party endorsement but also on the promise that he opposed and would take swift action on the sleeping ban. And of course, he has done no such thing. So it's important if the Green Party is to mean anything, and maybe it doesn't. It certainly hasn't for the last 2 years on local issues that I'm aware of. But insofar as it might in the future mean something, for it to take action to control and hold accountable the public officials that flout the party platform. And I've read the party platform here in the past. Statewide party platform, due to the work of David Silva and others, specifically bars sleeping bans, says we don't want no damn sleeping bans, and we won't stand for them. Now, I don't know how effective that's been, because Green Party council member Mike Feinstein in Santa Monica, as far as I know, has taken no action to end that sleeping ban in Santa Monica, which actually has gotten worse. And I don't know how they're doing up in Arcata, where at one time they had a Green Party majority. So these are issues that look nice on the platform, that lure in the radicals and the activists, but then, you know, they get forgotten when people get into office. It seems to have been the case with Ed Porter. It seems to be the case with Tim. It's definitely the case with Tim Fitzmaurice. In fact, at the last Green Party meeting, Becky Johnson, a Green Party member, brought up 9 suggestions as to what to do with Tim Fitzmaurice and outlined his history of sabotaging sleeping ban repeal in the last 2 years. The 9 suggestions range from essentially doing nothing to recalling him. Of course, if anybody had threatened to set fire to themselves on the lawn of City Hall, no doubt they would have been taken to Dominican immediately for examination, if a former Mayor Keith Sugar had anything to say about it. I mention that because that's what happened to David Silva last summer when he raised the image of self-immolation because he was so frustrated with the process. And the lies and the backtracking that Mayor Sugar and the police department and the folks working on that subcommittee and the city manager and the city attorney all did when they were supposed to be setting up those safe sleeping zones for homeless people, which we've heard nothing more about, of course, even though there's supposed to be 3 votes from the summer for those zones and presumably at least 2 more, or at least 1 more, and 4 is a majority. There could have been safe sleeping zones all winter if Ed Porter had raised the issue at city council. Either that or you would have had a major scandal, because Tim Fitzmaurice would have had to essentially go against the Green Party platform on that issue and show, well, he's shown it already, but do so even more overtly, how hostile he is to basic civil rights when that doesn't fit into his essentially West Side Green Street mentality. Now, Fitzmaurice has been invited to, he'll listen to this program and to call in, and of course he doesn't do that. He doesn't like the public discussion and the public dialogue much. You see this kind of reluctance to engage the public at city council meetings as he cuts off people's oral communications. Myself, of course, because he doesn't want to hear what I have to say. But he also is reluctant even to allow others to speak beyond the oral communications time. This, of course, he was elected to allow greater public participation. And in fact, what's happening is less. He's adopted decorum rules at city council that exclude the media, for example, from videotaping from a position where you can actually see the speakers. He has excluded the media from putting microphones at the mic. They have to now use the public address system, which, by the way, is pretty worthless. So it becomes difficult to get you have to buy the tapes or transcribe the tapes afterward. Makes it more difficult. The first 3 rows of the audience he has announced, although this isn't always followed out, are roped off. It's becoming a much more intimidating kind of coercive process, masquerading under the name of decorum. Similarly, he now has a police sergeant, Bob Hennig, standing up there to the right near the door of the city council, right next to the city clerk, where the city clerk sits. And if you try to give your green card to the city clerk, he will intercept you and will take it from you and then turn in this formal fashion and give it to her. It's just increasingly clear that there is not a move to make this a more accessible government, but rather to accommodate those in power and insulate those in power. And the Green Party's homeless working group today, which meets, and I'm going to invite my producer to call in and give the time and place of that meeting. I believe the community needs to give input to the Green Party and tell them, look, you know, are you in fact a party that stands behind its principles? Or are these people that, because they're in power, you're so infatuated with the notion of power and of having your pals in power, or people with the Green Party label plastered across their chest, that you don't care the kind of reflection this produces in the Green Party in terms of a real abandonment of basic civil rights issues? And I put it rather bluntly because, frankly, this issue has been around for far too long. It's been around for 2 years. And people have said to me, well, you know, give this homeless working group a chance to meet. This is their first meeting. My question is, why? Why is this their first meeting in 2 years? What's the problem there? Why didn't you notice it in December of 1998 when Tim Fitzmaurice sided with Catherine Byers to crush Crone and Sugar's suspension of the sleeping ban over the 1998-99 winter? It certainly was publicized well enough. There were plenty of people in the audience. It was put out over the TV audience to everybody. But the Green Party had nothing to say about that. You know? Now, there are some who claim that I'm, you know, coming down too hard on them. I think they need to fish or cut bait. And I think that if they don't want to handle it, then other groups should form to handle it. Because people joining the Green Party who believe they're joining a party which is going to be concerned about the civil rights of poor people and rent control have quite a shock coming to them if they believe the propaganda and they don't understand the history. And unless the Green Party holds its politicians accountable, then it is a meaningless group. So again, this is for those who want to get to the Green Party meeting today, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's the homeless working group. Again, if you're not a Green Party member, you will only be allowed to listen and speak in terms of the time allowed for that. but you will be allowed to offer constructive suggestions. Also at this meeting coming up is the whole issue of how to hold Tim Fitzmaurice accountable around his sleeping ban betrayal, because that's what it is. And that will be coming up both at this meeting and then 3 days later at a steering committee meeting of the Greens, which meets in the evening of Wednesday. Again, call 423-HUFF for the time and place. And at that steering committee meeting, they've now adopted this process where you have to go through the steering committee to get on the agenda in any meaningful way. It's sort of like SCAN did, which in essence, it puts insiders in control of the process, making me very, very nervous and apprehensive. And it also was a process that was adopted without any significant discussion by the entire Green Party in terms of having it out as a proposal before it reached the Green Assembly, which is their word for the, their meetings a couple weeks ago when it was passed by consensus. It's also being held at Arnie Leff's house, by the way, and I find that I didn't say anything about this at the time when it was brought up, but I find it, I have great concerns, not because of any personal animosity toward Dr. Leff, who's done some good work on medical marijuana a long time ago. I wish he'd done some more recent good work in supporting the medical marijuana patients who are now wandering the streets because Valerie Corral and the other group that she heads, WAM, apparently has some sort of endless feud with the Cannabis Pharmaceuticals Club, and so Cannabis Pharmaceuticals, she and the larger Cannabis Club did not get together to push for a medical marijuana emergency, which would have saved Cannabis Pharmaceuticals, which has about two or three times as many, or maybe four or five times as many clients, and so all those people are out on the streets looking for their medication, or you know, have to run to other sources. Anyway, Leff didn't speak up on this issue. Leff is a Green Party insider who was supported last time by the Green Party, and I called him a spoiler, and I urged him not to run, mainly because he has such a horrible record as the head of the Citizens Police Review Board, but I also urged him not to run because, well, I didn't urge him not to run because I thought he would split the vote, but he in fact ended up by doing that. We got Kennedy and Premack in there, because, and rather than Bugenthal, who might or might not have been better, I suspect he probably would have been incrementally better, because Leff and his political aspirations were primary, apparently, and the Green Party, I think, let themselves be used in this capacity. So, it's interesting. I got an email on this issue from a Green Party member that I have some sort of personal agenda around the sleeping ban, that therefore I should be cut off the email list of the Green Party. You know, everybody has a right to their opinion, and we've got, you know, people with different thoughts on all kinds of subjects, some more repressive than others. But this isn't a personal agenda at all. This is a political agenda. And I had thought that the Green Party had a similar political agenda, which had to do with basic civil rights for poor people, decent treatment of people by police, community control of police, holding the politicians that you elect accountable. You know, I'm hoping that that still is the case, and I'm hoping that that will be the case in the days to come. Again, more information about the Green Party meeting of the their own homeless working group. It'll be meeting today at 4. Give a call to 423-HUFF if you'd like more information about that. It is supposed to be a public meeting in the sense that the public are invited. However, the chair of that meeting has warned me that there are going to be a lot of discussion of mission statement and setting up the process of the committee, and that he wants to do work on that, and therefore people should be advised that that may be more the focus of the meeting than any substantive issues. So be advised of that. And let's see here. Actually it says 525 Palm Street is the address. That's Bonnie Moore's house, for those who are interested. 4 o'clock today, 525 Palm Street. And I know Bonnie has been an active campaigner around the sleeping ban and making sure that it ends. She was one of the few people in the city council race that actually came out wholeheartedly for that issue, and I commend her for hosting this meeting of the homeless working group, and I hope that that something really strong comes out of this, that the steering committee doesn't block it on Wednesday, and that the Green Party Assembly quickly passes it in terms of holding its office holders accountable on these issues. Because I think nothing will have a more salutary effect than this kind of behavior, because it not only publicizes the issue quite strongly, but it really puts, I think, some meaningful pressure on politicians to really deal with issues that they have preferred not to deal with. Anyway, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm going on at great length here. Let's turn to something else. Here is something that might interest you. About 3 or 4 weeks ago, the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women held public hearings, and several women spoke at these hearings about the impact of laws like the sleeping ban on homeless women and really the negative impact. And actually, the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women itself voted to end the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance as essentially damaging to homeless women, in that they couldn't sleep together in well-lighted areas, they couldn't use police services, they couldn't find safe areas to sleep, which, while they might not be specifically mandated by the city, if there weren't a sleeping ban, people could sleep in groups where they could kind of look after each other, so that accidents would be less likely to happen as well, such as overdoses, such as death by hypothermia, which happened to Boxer Bill in the Beach Flats back in November. All these things would be, to some extent, ameliorated if if they hadn't set up specific safe sleeping zones, but if people were allowed to sleep in groups without being hassled by the police, provided there were no other problems like litter or trash or disturbing the peace or public urination or defecation. And of course, to make that work, you would need the city council to keep its promise, which the Crone Crapper Commission, the Crone Task Force on Bathrooms, to put in those porta potties and dumpsters, which they said they were going to do back in 1999 in the spring, reaffirmed they should be doing in the summer of 2000, and of course did absolutely nothing about. And even when the city manager said he wasn't, wasn't doing anything, Ed Porter, our great liberal on the city council, has taken no action around these issues in any public way. So, Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women has taken a stand on the sleeping ban. And at this hearing, let's listen to Sherry Connable talk about the issue, as well as other issues around women.
Good evening. I only found out about this meeting last night, and I hope I can be relatively coherent. Sort of a number of different things I'd like to say to you. It's really moving to be here, and a lot of the issues that are being brought forth have been issues in my own life. I'm also a sexual abuse survivor and a rape survivor. I've raised two male children, and I'm very aware of the ways of which our culture oppresses our men and our boys that are equally insidious to the way women are oppressed. And I believe that it's out of softness and gentleness and love and compassion that we call forth those qualities in each other. And to the extent that we extend those qualities toward our men and our boys, we call that forth in them as well. And that is the way, ultimately, that violence is stopped. I'm going to speak tonight on behalf of homeless women, and as I do that, I want to acknowledge that I'm also speaking on behalf of homeless men and of brotherhood and sisterhood. I brought before you a complaint that's also in front of the internal affairs and the CPRB about the response of the police to the beating of a homeless woman downtown, in which I believe that the police response was not only professionally inadequate, but that they became perpetrators of further violation toward her in their response. And I'm concerned about the more systemic attitude that represents and the destructive and pernicious effects that has in the lives of homeless women. And so what I really want to talk about is the kinds of violation that occur under the umbrella of institutional power and institutional authority, both the laws we have and the ways those laws are enforced. There's been a lot of talk in Santa Cruz and a lot of organizing around the Santa Cruz camping ban. And there's a lot of history of sort of personal animosity and people banging heads, and I wish that we could set that aside and really look at what really is at issue here. There are many homeless women who choose to have a dog as a companion. That's a very reasonable step for a woman living on the streets. There are many homeless women who have significant mental health challenges and can't safely go into situations like the Armory at night. That's not an option for them for shelter at night. To feel that they have to hide and able to sleep, to be able to sleep at night, or to be awakened and told to move on, sometimes to be ticketed, to be awakened in vehicles and told to move on. All of this creates really destructive effects in their lives. And sometimes, for those of us who live in the comfort of houses, it's hard to really understand what that's like. The City Council of Santa Cruz seems to believe that there's enforcement of the Santa Cruz camping ban only by complaint. That is not true. I wrote a letter to you that there have been regular sweeps of the rivers, and the homeless people living there, women included, are told they have about 2 hours to get all their belongings out, or their belongings will be confiscated and thrown away. This is all they have. They have a tent. They have a few blankets. They might have a cook stove. I was here a few years ago as a woman stood before the City Council and described three separate occasions in a period of a month where she had been awakened in her car at 2 in the morning and told to move on with her 6-year-old daughter, who she was trying very hard to get into school, in this successful start in school, and it wasn't helping. If the City of Santa Cruz really believes that it's important to have a camping ban on the books, then it's absolutely imperative that we set aside safe zones where people can sleep in dignity and safety. It's absolutely imperative. There are also laws on the books called the Downtown Ordinances. There are laws like riding your bike, having a dog on the mall. And I have frequently seen instances where those laws are selectively enforced against homeless and poor people and not against people who look more middle class. So that somebody who has tattered and torn clothing with a mutt on a sort of tattered rope is given a ticket, and somebody who's dressed in nice middle class clothes with a purebred dog on a leash, a nice leash, might be suggested to maybe that they're supposed to not have their dog in the mall. They're certainly not ticketed. Same thing with bike violations. It goes on all the time. And those kinds of tickets and that kind of treatment for somebody living in the conditions of homelessness with very little money has a serious impact on their lives. And it's a kind of institutional violation that goes on a lot and that we are really, really not looking at and taking responsibility for. I helped facilitate a program a few years ago where we assisted homeless people in learning how to use the state park system as a place to camp. And we did that in groups. And we actually got city funded for that project. And at a certain point, we opened that program up particularly to families and tried to get families to come into the program. And what we found was two things. Most families didn't want it to be known that they were homeless because they were afraid of losing their children. Homeless people lose their children to the system at a much higher percentage rate than people who aren't homeless. And I remember one couple in particular who came to us, and they came sort of with some fear because it was within the system. And they had recently lost a vehicle. They'd been stopped because they didn't have a current registration, and a vehicle had been impounded. Now, there's the possibility of an impoundment of 30 days for a vehicle if you lose it, if you're driving without current registration, without a license. If you're homeless and your vehicle's impounded for 30 days, you can't afford to get it back out. You've lost the only protection you have. In this situation, the vehicle was impounded, and the officer, who happened to be a CHP officer, but I just want to bring this forward again as an example of what happens said to the man with his wife sitting next to him and their 5-year-old daughter in her lap, "Yeah, we're getting all the piece of shit vehicles off the road, and we're getting all the pieces of shit off the road." So what I'm really inviting you to do, because I know that you like solutions or suggestions about what to do, is to really look at this rigorously and boldly and bravely, and to write a letter of concern to the city council about laws and or the enforcement of laws in the city of Santa Cruz that seriously compromise the health and safety and well-being of homeless people and homeless women, and ask that those laws be re-examined and be ameliorated, and that there be education of law enforcement officials about how to really, really reflect fair and equal treatment under the law rather than selective and discriminatory enforcement. It's deeply, deeply wrong what we're doing. It's deeply wrong, and it needs to be changed.
And that was activist and community advocate Sherry Connable at the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, an official Citigroup, holding a public hearing 3 or 4 weeks ago. The next week they had their regular meeting, and I had hoped to hear from one of the board members whether they actually wrote that letter. Haven't heard yet. Perhaps somebody out there knows. If you do, or if you have some thoughts on what we've been discussing and you want to share them with us, give us a call at 427-3772, 427-3772, to speak on the air. If you want to talk off-air, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And, of course, you're tuned to 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Here's an interview from the street recently, which I found shocking, with a man named Warren Wess. See what you think.
Testing 1, 2, 3. Hello.
It's 11:30 on February 21st, 2001. We're in front of the Echo Clothing across from, across from Zoccoli's on Pacific Avenue, talking to
Warren West.
And Warren, you've got a bike here, but you've got no bike lock. Now, why don't you have a bike lock?
Yes, sir.
You do have a bike lock, but you apparently lost a bike lock the other day out at the Capitola Mall.
Yeah, the same one, a $13 one. They sawed it off and said it wasn't malicious, and then when I went to inquire in the main office, they screamed assault, and so I have an assault charge.
So this was a couple weeks ago? Or?
Yeah, it was. I have the ticket right here.
And when this happened, you were, you were a customer at the Capitola Mall?
Yeah, I was inside shopping a Radio Shack.
And you came out and found that your bike lock had been sawed off?
Yeah.
And where was your bike parked?
They said it was illegally parked on a water main, and now they put a fence around the water main. Except they have a speaker system. They could have alerted me on the speaker system, to if there was immediate need. And there's no immediate need to take my bike off or saw a lock. And
how long were you in the store?
Well, maybe 10 minutes.
Wow, so they're pretty fast.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You think it had to do with your, shall we say, bearded and long-haired appearance?
I don't know what it was. Maybe the buses stopped there, and I've had an ongoing problem with several of these bus drivers. So maybe they recognized my bicycle, and they had friends that run the mall, and so it might have started from there.
And again, the date of this was?
I'm looking.
Looks like the date is the 24th of January, and this is a ticket written by, let's see, this is...
Oh, that's what they left. That's what they left on the lock. So I knew.
It says lock to a water main. This is a warning. Your lock will be cut, and the bike removed. Please use bike racks. Thank you, security. And that's the date of this issue was 1/24, the same day. So, but you said they cut it within 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. And the bike racks were filled up.
Uh-huh.
And the water main was illegal, and it shouldn't. It was sticking right out in the middle of the sidewalk, and nobody was in. The store was vacant, and so they said, "Oh, a construction guy cut it off." At least when the police came.
Now, you went in and talked to who about this with the bike lock in hand?
I went into the main office. I walked in and out around the mall with my bicycle, and I was looking. I had no way to lock my bicycle up. I had walked my bicycle in there before and to eat, and every time within 30 to 60 seconds, they had told me, "No bicycles allowed." This time I walked the whole length of the mall, inside and out, backwards and forward, looking for the main office. There was not one security guard. That proves to me they were waiting for me to go and confront somebody about who was responsible for cutting my lock. The moment I did, they screamed assault.
Now, in what way did you confront? Who did you talk to? Do you remember?
I went into the main office where the secretary was, and I said, I want to know who's responsible for this, with the ticket in one hand and the bicycle lock in the other.
Now, were you speaking in a loud voice?
Yeah, I was mad, but I wasn't mad at her, and I wasn't threatening her in any way. And
what did she say to you when you said that?
And she didn't have a chance to say anything. And before, within 2 seconds, another guy came out of the back room and said, you're trespassing. Get out. I says, I want the police. And he says, the police are on the way. And I said, good. And so that was it.
Who was the individual who said you're trespassing? A security officer?
No, he was one of the guys, the suit guys, I guess, in the main office, the owner of the mall.
Did you tell them you wanted to file a complaint about how your property was damaged?
I went to the police and I says I spoke to the sergeant next Monday, and he says, oh, I've determined it wasn't malicious. So anything they do to, you know, they can call anybody else if their car's parked wrong, but if they don't like you, they can do anything they want to your vehicle, and it's deemed not malicious.
Now, what happened when the police arrived? Were you told to leave? Were you given a ticket? Were you arrested?
No, they gave me a ticket for assault, which I didn't do. And then they said, and I said, well, wait, can't you? Is there somebody responsible for this? And I couldn't get anything out of them, so I went and spoke to the sergeant. You know, because they destroyed my property and they're not responsible for it. That's not right.
Now, you said you also had is there more you want to say about this incident?
No, it's just a setup. It's a setup. I've been set up 3 times in the 5 years I lived here in Santa Cruz.
Tell me about the first time.
The first time, they woke me up on my birthday. I was drunk in an alley, asleep, in Aptos, minding my own business. And they said, you're going to detox. I said, well, fine, I'm drunk. It's my birthday. A friend bought me a bottle. And so they drove me to a place I'd never been before, the back street of Dominican Hospital. The cop lady pulls over and says, can you make it from here?
This is a deputy?
This is a deputy police. And, well, that's a silly question. I'm drunk, but I say, of course, yeah, I can make it. So I get out. I'm barely standing up. I can't even, and she drives off with my bicycle. I'm thinking, if I only have my bicycle, I can lean on my bicycle and walk. Here comes a little security guard. He walks right up and stands next to me. I try to take a step. I start to fall over, and I grab onto him, and we fall down. That's assault. If that isn't setting somebody up, I don't know what is.
So were you arrested for that?
No. Then from there, they put me in the the mental health thing and gave me a shot of something in my butt, and I was out for 3 days. And
were you then taking the court on this?
Yeah, I went to court on it, and I told the judge exactly what I did, and I said, well, you know, it might have been a long shot at assault, and I did like 100 hours of community service, volunteer work.
So you found you guilty? Or did you plead guilty?
I think I pled guilty, because I can't, they say, I don't want to do years in jail for fighting these people, and if they come with me, it's always come at you with a deal, or you do a year in jail. And I've done a year in jail for drunk in public for something in other counties when I wasn't even drinking on my own property. And I've been kicked out of houses for having too many nice things because they said, oh, well, you must be a dealer. Now, if I was a poor dope user, that would be okay. I could live in any Section 8 housing I wanted to live. But as long as I'm successful and I'm not using dope, then there's something wrong with that.
Now, where were you jailed for a year for drunk?
In Clear Lake on my own property.
And how long ago was that?
That was 6-7 years ago. I haven't been back there since.
And again, Clear Lake is in California?
Yeah, it's up north. The cops are dealing speed, and they have their own pot farms up there. And they felt threatened. They wanted me to make payola to them, to live on my own land.
So they actually asked you for money, and that's it?
Yeah, they sent their Gunsel boys into jail where I was doing a year for drunk in public. And they said, oh, I can live on my own land if I pay them $60 a week. Well, hoop-dee-doo.
So, but a year in jail sounds like a lot of time for drunk in public. How did that happen?
Huh? Oh, well, they said I resisted arrest and everything else. Well, why wouldn't I resist arrest? They maced me in my sleep in my own property, and then hog-tied me and drug me out across my property line. And they said, no, now you're in public. Well, yeah, if they drag you across your property line, I guess you are in public.
Now, why did they originally come to arrest you?
There was no reasoning behind why they came there originally to arrest me.
What's your analysis as to why they did that?
They want my land, or they want me off my land.
And how long had you been on that land, and how big was that land?
That's just a 60 by 120 foot lot overlooking the lake. It's a nice lot.
And why do you say they wanted you off the land? Have they previously approached you? And we're talking about what, particular police officers or other people?
No, there's a particular police, drug dealing cops there that think they just have a right to crush anybody they want.
Any names you wish to name?
I don't remember their names.
Right. So that was, coming back now into Santa Cruz, you mentioned there were three times that you've been set up. The first was this, so you were taken to Dominican, held there, in essence set up because they didn't take you into the hospital. Instead, they left you out in front of the hospital where you had to stagger in?
Well, I couldn't even walk. I was too drunk to walk. They woke me up out of sound sleep, drove me to a place I'd never been, said, can you make it from here? I thought, well, maybe I can make it from here. And so I told them, yes, I can make it from here. And they drove off with my bicycle in the trunk. I had no way to stabilize myself. When I took the first step, I started falling, and I grabbed whichever was there, which happened to be another security guard. And that was considered assault.
And you pled to that. Now, were you actually held on a 5150 after that in the psych ward? You say you spent 3 days in Dominican?
Yeah.
And yet they convicted you of a crime while you were supposedly in the middle of a psychiatric condition?
Right.
Looks like they're having it both ways. They can hold you, you know, involuntarily and then give a crime.
They put me in jail with an abscessed tooth and then put me in the rubber room in the hole for 3 days and three nights with my neck swollen up and I couldn't even breathe.
Now, was this during the first incident or was this second incident?
This was like when I first came to town. It was because I had beer on my breath on New Year's Eve.
And where were you picked up for this?
On Pacific Avenue here.
And what year was that?
It was like 85.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that, so actually it's more than three incidents, since this incident preceded those three, but what about the second incident that you talk about being jacked, set up three times? The second incident?
It was over and over and over I've had incidents where bus drivers would try to be police, and they make their life exciting by creating a crime where none exists. I've been forced to walk from Coralitas, told my bus pass is no good, told that my day pass is no good, and that if I don't like it, I can take it up to the supervisor. When I take it up to the supervisor, I walk all the way 15 miles back to town. The next day, I go to the supervisor and say, I should have a refund on this bus pass because I had to walk. Oh, no, you don't get a refund. And then I've been told that my bicycle doesn't fit on the racks. It can't be seen over, and other people have identical bicycles that they're fit perfectly. And
we're looking at your bicycle now. This is the one we're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay, and this is a bicycle that comes up to about my chest, which is about 5 feet high, you'd say, maybe?
Yeah, four and a half, 5 feet tall. But they say they can't see through the handlebars or it's too long. And it doesn't fit on the racks, and it fits perfect. And there's nobody that will even give me a fair hearing about my bicycle. But the last thing I pled guilty to, I agreed not to ride the bus for a year. But after that year's up, should I decide to ride the bus, are they just gonna deny me because they don't like my bicycle again?
They don't. They won't allow you to ride any bus in the city county area for a year.
That's right. Because this guy, the same guy that would not give me my refund, called me up in Ben Lomond with my bicycle, and it was a mudslide condition. I only had a t-shirt on. It was 8 o'clock at night. He jumps off and blocks my path, jumps off the bus, blocks my path, put his finger in my chest, calls me names, calls me a drunk son of a bitch.
Were you drunk at the time?
No, I hadn't been any. So I knocked his teeth, and the proof of it was I couldn't have been drinking because I couldn't have knocked his teeth out and took his little baseball bat away if I had been drinking or
drunk.
So
he approached you with a baseball bat?
Yeah, he approached me with a pocket bat.
You defended yourself by punching him? Or?
Right. And so now I can't ride the bus for a year, and I have to do a community service, and I don't know, and maybe even have to go to civil court. But see, the civil court's not right because he's threatened my life with freezing by exposure.
What's his name?
Jason Hart.
Okay, and he's employed with the
Metro.
Okay.
And it's not. And there's two women that go the Coralitas route, and they're supposed to run every hour or every half hour, and they always run one behind the other every hour. They've never run on a schedule, and I don't know what it is because they definitely hate men, And they don't run by their schedule. One always follows the other. So you have two buses running within 10 seconds of each other.
And why do you say they hate men? Are you talking about the female bus driver?
Yeah, there's two female bus drivers that go to Corralitos and Watsonville, and they just hate men.
Why do you say that?
Because they both have kicked me off the bus.
Maybe they hate you.
Well, they hated me, and they're really surly to men.
You observe a difference in how they treat women and how they treat men.
Exactly.
I see.
And
how long? This is a bus you regularly used until you were barred from the buses.
Right. Right.
How many times would you say you used it in a year?
I was using that bus.
How frequently did you?
I use it like 20 times a year, and out of those 20 times, when they were on, I'd get kicked off 10 times, so I'd either have to walk or ride my bicycle.
Now would they kick anyone else off?
Never. They never kick anyone.
Why wouldn't they kick off all those other men they didn't like?
Because apparently they have a problem. They said, oh, we don't like your bus pass. We don't like your ticket. Well, short of me waiting for a cop and refusing to get off the bus, you know, they'll send the head of their board out and say, oh, you're right, you'll have to take up with supervisor. So I'm left standing on the side of the road with a ticket that's no good that I paid money for, and I have to take it up with a supervisor that's 13 or 20 miles away.
So you're saying that on 10 occasions, because on each of those occasions, was it pretty much for a ticket they didn't like, or there are other reasons?
No, it was just a ticket they didn't like.
And what didn't they like about the ticket?
They says, oh, we don't recognize your bus pass.
Why is that?
They said, oh, well, we didn't issue it.
What kind of a bus pass was it? You're looking in your wallet for a pass.
Yeah, it's universal throughout California. It's a disabled bus pass. It was given to me in Sacramento, and it's got Metro written all over it. It's got my disability number. All they have to do is call that number in.
West and have your disability number. On the back, it says this card is the property of Sacramento Regional Transit District and is used to identify youth, students under the age of 20, pursuing a high school diploma, senior citizens and disabled people eligible for discount fares. Now, are you in any one of those categories? Are you disabled?
Yeah, I'm disabled.
And what is your disability?
Manic depressive.
Okay. It says, a right to possess this card may be revoked at any time, shall be surrendered upon demand, upon request of an RT employee without refund, if someone else is possessing it, it's altered, it violates applicable laws, ordinances, resolutions, rules, or regulations. So, have they ever honored this?
Yeah, I go in, and I said, I want to buy a new bus pass. And they said, well, when was the last time you were up in Sacramento? I said, well, I was up there last month. And they said, oh, well, it's good for 6 months. They wouldn't even sell me another bus pass.
So, but this has been honored on the local buses at times, or never?
Yeah. Everybody honors it except the one guy that goes to, the two women that go to Corralitos, and the one guy that goes to Ben Lomond.
Have you ever taken complaints about those three drivers to their authorities?
Yeah, I called Santa Cruz. I would talk to the Santa Cruz free attorneys about
legal aid
about these two women that won't let me on the bus.
And what did they say?
They talked to the bus drivers, and then everything was fine after that.
When was that?
That was about 6 months ago. Except now this bus driver that goes now the bus driver that goes to Ben Lomond started giving me a really hard time, especially when he wants to strand me out in a mudslide at 8 o'clock with only a T-shirt on, and there's no other transportation.
So the legal aid attorneys felt you had a valid case because they did talk to the drivers about it and the driver's behavior after that change.
Yeah, right.
However, as of about what time you've been barred from using all buses for a year?
Yeah, like when the last incident was about 30 days ago.
So you actually, are you homeless yourself?
I have friends' houses I stay in, and I own property up in Clear Lake. So I don't know. That's a relative term.
So you still have your property in Clear Lake?
Yeah, I still own it.
So why aren't you in Clear Lake?
Because I can't deal with the drug mob mentality police.
I see. So maybe we should all move up to Clear Lake and try to clear out the bad cops. That might be a little difficult.
Uh-huh.
We've been talking to
Warren West,
one of the last few people to have a meal and conversation with Happy John Dine, who was shot by Santa Cruz police back in 1998, I guess it was. Actually, no, 97 in November. Any other information you want to give us about What's been happening in Santa Cruz? You're giving us a mouthful.
Well, I feel I can be kinder than they can be devious, because I'm a Christian, and I think as long as I keep getting the luck of the draw with fair judges, and they keep giving me diminished sentences, and they can just read between the lines how these police are breaking law after law after law to make a crime where none exist.
And we're talking about the deputies and the incident in Aptos.
And the bus drivers.
And talking about a
few deputies and a few bad bus drivers.
How about Santa Cruz police?
I've only had one or two bad instances with them, and I haven't lived in Santa Cruz for 3 years now, Santa Cruz proper. So, and then most of them were pretty good. There were one or two bad ones.
Ever been hassled for not having a light on your bike?
Yeah, there's the old sergeant out in Aptos. He hassles everybody for no light. But I have lights. I just don't put them on.
Well, maybe the fine $100,000 or is it $300,000 grant that the cops are getting for more people to police the bicyclists can be used not just to provide the famed helmets, but also free bike lights. That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. So I've got lights. I put them on in the daytime. I had a ticket about 2 years ago for parking my bicycle wrong on the boulevard. I said, well, I can move it if it's blocking anybody. Nobody complained. And he said, no, you can't move it. I'm writing you a ticket. And at the same minute, a guy was robbing the Wells Fargo Bank, and he ran through the park and got away. And I'm thinking, you know, if they wasn't right hassling people with bicycle tickets, they might have caught themselves a real
bank robber.
When was this? It was about a year and a half ago.
Where was this?
Well, I was on Pacific, and according to the paper, the bank robber ran through a lot San Lorenzo Park and got away.
Lesson to be learned. Thank you, Warren West.
Thank you, Robert.
Mary, Mary, urban Mary, how does your sidewalk grow?
With garbage cans overflowing.
With chewing gum wads and cigarette butts.
Do, do, do.
And popsicle sticks and potato chip bags.
Do, do, do.
With candy wrappers and beer cans.
Do, do, do.
And pop around the newspaper.
Do, do, do.
A bargain of a basement sublet. Flora Pavlovna is giving hers up. The soot on her windowsill is killing her geraniums, so she's going to go where her geraniums can grow. Not me, not me. Something's always going on every minute. I love to be here. City life, city life, city life for me.
One misty, moisty morning, virus was the weather waiting for the stop to come, closed in together. One began to talk and shake, another cursed his mother.
That was selection from Inner City. Before that, you were listening to an interview with Warren West on the street several days ago, recounting some heavy misadventures which relate just both to homeless people, bicyclists, and I think to all of us generally. if even 30% of what he says is accurate. And frankly, he didn't sound like a wild-eyed character in terms of kind of just aimless charges and random distortions. Again, we don't have the other side, and that's always a consideration. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. A couple of announcements before we go on. I mentioned before the Homeless Working Group of the Greens, the first ever Homeless Working Group of the Greens, meets today at 525 Palm Street. That's Bonnie Moore's house. And it's open to anybody who's interested in that issue, particularly Green Party members who will be allowed to vote on the issue. Other people will be able to listen and presumably to participate to some extent, but it will be it is a Green Party meeting. Palm Street is right off Mission Street near Long. Near Long's is what I hear. So for those who want to get there, kind of look for it go up Mission Street and go left on Palm and 525 at 4 o'clock. At 6 o'clock, the Homeless Working Group that has been working for some time, since the middle of last year, we began when the Safe Sleeping Zone debate was reaching its height, and the organization ROAR was actually around. That's Restore Our American Rights, the camper organization. We've been meeting virtually every week, certainly every 2 weeks since that time, lobbying supervisors, actually interviewing city council candidates, and we have those interviews, and I think they're going to be a very valuable resource in the months and the years to come. They meet at 6 o'clock at Baker's Square. That's a restaurant on Ocean Street, sort of across from Beach City Gas, I think it's called, or I think that's what it is. That's at 6 o'clock. And tomorrow at 7 o'clock, that's Monday the 24th, the long dormant Residentes Unidos will be meeting again for the first time in, must be 4 or 5 months, it seems like. Residentes Unidos is a group that formed initially in the Lee Apartments and then to include Dolphin apartment tenants down in the beach flats, concerned that the proposed Dolphin Lee project by the city actually include guarantees that were legally enforceable for the tenants, so they didn't just get swept up, some of them, into a project that helped a few, but that essentially dispersed a lot of people who were there in the name of affordable housing in a project which primarily has been backed by Mercy Charities Housing and its proxies on the city council, mainly Tim Fitzmaurice, sort of has been the chief cheerleader, although the rest of the council has indeed gone along with this whole thing. The Dolphin, as people may know, was purchased first by the... it was purchased actually directly by Mercy Charities Housing. And the money was actually given to them by the city to purchase it. Mercy Charities has been running it with slightly lowered rents, supposedly making repairs. I've heard of nobody evicted. Thank you, Mercy Charities, for not evicting anybody thus far. And if that's the case, although it does seem that the number of people that they estimate, Mercy Charities says, are in the apartments, 156 or 158 men, women, and children, is considerably less than the estimates given by the former manager, Maria Gutierrez, which ranged from 300 to 400. And when I first heard this discrepancy, I was really shocked because I thought, wow, there's a lot of missing people there, or at least a lot of people that are missing on paper. And I was afraid that even if the people aren't being evicted right now, the only people they're putting on paper now are the ones that are going to be able to either get relocation benefits or get some sort of ability to get back in the project if and when they have a project. And of course they've been going back and forth on that issue about whether we have a project or not, mainly it seems to me to exclude public participation, or at least certainly that is one of the effects. Mercy Charities Housing Management, apparently it is, the on-site manager is Veronica Lopez Duran, previously employed by the redevelopment agency, now paid by Mercy Charities Housing. And the reason I'm bringing up this issue, and I guess the reason that Residentes Unidos is going to be meeting tomorrow, and that'll be at 124 Lee Brandt Street in the Lee Apartments garage, and public is invited, is because the Lee Apartments appears on the city council agenda, the open agenda, for the first time. In the past month or two, it has appeared several times improperly, I believe, on the closed agenda. That is the meeting by the city council that the public does not have access to, that there is no tape made of, that is confidential, in which they chat things out that we should be hearing about, but that we aren't. And of course, what they claim is, oh, this is litigation or negotiations. But in fact, I believe this has to do with real policy decisions in camera, and that's the problem. We have an incoming call here.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Good afternoon, Robert. How are you?
Hey, Bob LaMonica. You got something to say about the Dolphin Lee?
Well, I thought it might be interesting. I've been listening to your show, particularly the early part when you were talking about the wayward green movement here in Santa Cruz.
All right.
It might be interesting to talk about so-called progressive organizations in Santa Cruz and why they don't seem to do other than get behind bandwagons. And I got a list of six, the Green Party being the newest.
Okay.
SCAN.
Santa Cruz Action Network.
SCIU 415.
Mm-hmm.
The People's Democratic Club.
Right.
The Resource Center for Nonviolence.
Uh-huh.
And I'll add one more, the CAB, the Community Action Board. Now, every now and then, Paul Brundell will make a comment about something that's provocative.
Say that again.
Every now and then, Paul Brundell at CAB will make a comment about something provocative. He will get behind...
Ending the
sleeping ban. He'll mm-hmm. get behind, at least theoretically, rent control, at least uh-huh. bringing it up above board. Invariably, the vulnerable, the venerable Santa Cruz progressive organizations are about winning. They're about power. They're not about leadership. They're not about being provocative. They're not about getting people to think. In fact, when you do think independently, you're ostracized, you're a pariah. Now, I give credit to Nick Whitehead and David Silva. I hope that they don't get co-opted in their attempts to make the Green Party in Santa Cruz something other than a ruse, another ruse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I share your concerns, and that's one of the reasons I'll be at this 4 o'clock meeting. It's been pointed out to me that we have endless meetings and then little action, and that's, of course, always a problem. And the real question that you and I, Bob, and others need to answer is, how do we form an organization that really does do something? And that's a question. You know, I have a small organization, Huff. You did some organizing with rent control.
Well, maybe this year is the year. Maybe this year is the year to try to pull something together in Santa Cruz that's other than a scam. And I will speak candidly because I have come to the point where I will express openly contempt for the established, progressive, management bureaucrats mm-hmm. in this town who have the audacity to think that they're leaders.
Well, I think most of us, and particularly those who listen to this show, know otherwise. And the real question is, how can we get the folks who understand differently to unite in a way that has some different, makes some real impact?
The difficulty is that property values have become so important in this town, and property values go along with the whole not in my backyard movement.
Mm-hmm.
No rent control. We want the sleeping ban. People jump to conclusions immediately. I really wonder whether if the sleeping ban were brought above board, and I would like to read the first two sentences of Camping Prohibited, Robert.
Sure.
How silly this is. This is Santa Cruz Municipal Code 6.36.010, Camping Prohibited.
Mm-hmm.
No person shall camp anywhere in the city of Santa Cruz, whether on public or private property, except as hereinafter expressly permitted. To camp means to do any of the following. Now, by the way, there are some exceptions for 3 days with permission, right? You can do certain things.
Well, yeah, there are very minor exceptions,
which I'll
outline after you finish.
Very minor. Okay. Uh-huh. No person shall camp anywhere in the city of Santa Cruz, whether on public or private property, except as hereinafter expressly permitted. To camp means to do any of the following. A, sleeping. Sleeping. 11 p.m. to 8:30 a.m. To sleep at any time between the hours of 11 p.m. to 8:30 a.m. in any of the following places. 1. Outdoors, with or without bedding, tent, hammock, or other similar protection or equipment. 2. In or under any structure not intended for human occupancy, whether with or without bedding, tent, hammock, or other similar protection or equipment.
And that excludes all buildings but hotels and houses, that provision. So
this is
mm-hmm.
last part of this, section
mm-hmm.
3,
mm-hmm.
part 3. In, on, or under any parked vehicle, including an automobile, bus, truck, camper, trailer, or recreational vehicle.
So that excludes even vehicles intended for sleeping.
It is. This needs to be brought above board. Do we need this law on paper in Santa Cruz? Santa Cruz by the bay, with the university, with all of its progressive history, right? And here this thing is, has been on paper since the 70s, sleeping, 11 p.m. to 8:30 a.m. to sleep at any time between the hours of 11 p.m. to 8:30 a.m. in any of the following places. And it starts out with outdoors, with or without bedding.
Mm-hmm.
Ticket. And, of course, was that Sherry Connable who was speaking?
Yes, it was.
Okay. Like she's saying, this has to be selectively enforced. Do people know that you were arrested, Robert, for leaning on the Saw Guy's statue?
No, I was sitting on the base of the platform of Tom Schreiner, musical saw player in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz.
And you were willing to challenge it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And, of course, they ended up showing how absurd this is. It could only be enforced selectively.
Yeah, they were embarrassed because three of the city council members who were shown sitting in the same place in a public photo, and they didn't want that brought out in court.
Well, how touching. The other thing that you touched on earlier, which is very important, are the so-called